First of Kings, chapter 4. King Solomon was king over all Israel, and these were the princes whom he had. We've got the list of his princes, and the different things they did. And then we're told he had 12 officers over all Israel who provided food for the king and his household. Each man had to make provision for a month in the year. Now, this was really a form of taxation. And when you look at the names of these 12 officers, you can see that quite a lot of them are from the tribe of Judah, which was Solomon's tribe. And there were, 12 tribes, but he was from Judah. And those who weren't, you can see they were related to him. For example, Ahimaaz in Naphtali, verse 15, he took Basemath, the daughter of Solomon, as wife. So he was a relative. And then you see some of the others who are clearly people with some connection to David. So the local rulers in Israel were not local people. For example, over the tribe of Naphtali, let's say there wasn't a local man from Naphtali, there was a man who was Solomon's son-in-law. And I think you see he's quite clever. He's really getting everybody to give him their taxes. He's centralizing power. And when he dies, the people come to his son Rehoboam and said, "Your father abused us. He whipped us. Please, please, can you just lighten up a bit?" So even right from the beginning, you see that Solomon was very cunning. And the fact that he later turned away from God and turned to idols, I think, had its seeds right at the beginning in his life. But you read in verse 20 that Judah and Israel were many as the sand which is by the sea in multitude, eating and drinking and making merry. Solomon ruled over all the kingdoms from the river to the land of the Philistines. That's from the Euphrates to the land of the Philistines and to the border of Egypt. And they brought tribute to Solomon. Well, this is a fulfillment to some degree of the promises to Abraham, that Israel would be as many as the sand that is by the sea in multitude. And he apparently rules over the whole territory that was promised to Abraham from the river Euphrates, really to the border of Egypt. So the promises of God, which form the basis of the gospel and that talk about the kingdom, they can have some small fulfillment in our lives now. The spirit of God's kingdom can come true now. It's not all just a good time coming in the future. It does all have some level of fulfillment now. And it emphasizes that he had dominion over all on this side of the river, that is the Euphrates, even over all the kings on this side of the river. Judah and Israel lived safely, every man under his vine and under his fig tree, from Dan even to Beersheba. So to live under your vine and fig tree, this is the figure that's used in Micah and Isaiah about how the kingdom of God in the future will be. And so it's clear that his kingdom was a little foretaste of how the kingdom of God will be in the future. But then we read, Solomon had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots and 12,000 horsemen. Well, in Deuteronomy, we're told that the king of Israel must not multiply horses and chariots to himself. And that's exactly what Solomon does. And in fact, the king is told that when he becomes king, he must copy out that law. I must not multiply horses and chariots to myself. I must not multiply wives to myself. And yet he does that, and yet he does the very opposite. So you can just see that the mere possession of wisdom, knowing the truth, of itself will not justify you. You've got to make it personal to you. You can talk about the kingdom of God shall come on the earth and the righteous will live forever and Jesus is coming. You can talk about that with great eloquence. But do you personally believe it is true for you? That I shall be in God's kingdom. That's different to knowing that salvation will come, that there is salvation in Jesus. That's one thing to know that. The other thing is to actually live according to the belief that I personally am saved. God gave Solomon great wisdom and understanding and very great perception according to the sand which is on the seashore. We've just read that Israel were as many as the sand on the seashore. So he's given this wisdom in order to govern Israel, which is what he asked for in the first place. Your people is so great, please give me wisdom. But although he had that for others, he quite clearly does not apply it to himself. He spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. Yeah, well, some of those proverbs are written down in the Book of Proverbs. And he was famous for this. Everybody thought it was wonderful, and it was wonderful. But all those things he wrote in the Book of Proverbs, like, my son, watch out for the Gentile woman, don't be flattered by her eyes, she'll lead you astray. Yeah, he goes and does exactly that. You read the Song of Solomon, you see him doing exactly that, being flattered by the eyes of his Egyptian girlfriend. And he does eventually fall away because his wives turned his heart away from God. They came of all peoples to hear the wisdom of Solomon, from all kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom. Think of the Queen of Sheba. So he was preaching, and it was wonderful what he was saying. But the lesson to us is that you can know truth, but not apply it to yourself. And he says in Ecclesiastes at the end of his life that, yes, I had all this wisdom, but wisdom was far from me. He means that it was a long way away from my heart. I knew all this, but I didn't make the personal connection with it. And that's what we can do. We must do that. We must absolutely say, this is all true for me. Jesus died on the cross. Yes, for me. He is coming again. Yes, but for little me. And little me, I will really live forever in God's kingdom.